We got a special guest. I mean, where'd he go? There he is. Hey. See? And he's the Debian project leader, the guy in charge of the whole thing, okay?
Thank you.
Oh, good afternoon. Lovely to see everyone. Hear me okay? Great. Lovely to see so many people here again. Of course, can only start with greetings from a hot and humid Taiwan. Thank you very much for inviting me and for the local organization team. Perhaps that can be done on the microphone. Yes, very much a hot and humid Taiwan. I mean, on that subject, I was recovering after my second shower of the day in my room, sort of half falling asleep, you know, in sort of afternoon haze, and I was suddenly awoken by a something like a bird stuck somewhere, or maybe on a balcony. What's going on? It was quite insistent. About half a minute later, heard the same bird. You know, what's going on? Then I realized it seemed to be coming from the wall just behind me. So maybe there's sort of panels and pipes coming through the wall, and there's a bird just got stuck in there. I've heard it happen before. So I call on the concierge telephone saying, there seems to be a bird stuck in the wall. It's making these sort of loud sounds. Can you see what's going on? Sure, certainly, sir, we'll send someone up. Wait about 5 minutes, doze off again, and the bird kicks off again, and no one had come up. So I ring back, terribly sorry, terribly to disturb. The bird seems to be here. Did no one come up? No, okay. We'll send someone up straight away, no problem. Again, sort of fall off in the humidity. And wake up again, woken up by the bird again. What's going on? Really sorry to disturb you, but the bird seems to be there and seems to be quite distressed. I mean, I don't think he can get out and things like that. I'm really sorry about this, sir. I don't know what happened. We sent someone up. I'll come up myself right away. Wait a few more minutes, again, just hacking away or something. And still, no one comes. And I'm just thinking, what's really going on here? So I call for the final time. I'm going to go back to the venue now. But no one's come up. I don't know what's going on. Have you got the right room number? And they're like, oh, I'm sorry, sir. Just for a second, just checking. You do know that our doorbell chimes are birdsong. There you go. Anyway, greetings from. Lovely to see you, so many people here. Great. Every time I stand up here or I'm around Debian developers, I get this question. So, what's it like being DPL? It's almost a cliched question. I'm never really sure how to answer it, really. I mean, because obviously when people ask these questions, they're sometimes looking for an answer, or maybe I don't want to put them off running themselves. But it's very difficult to answer because it's not really a position that has any parallel in any other free software project, I think. I mean, I can just make jokes all day about it. I mean, Debian project leader, what outsiders think I do. I mean, if you speak to other people, they think, oh, it's just me, decreeing that I think, we're going to use this thing over here, and you're going to do this, or you're going to do this. What other Debian developers think I do? I mean, everyone thinks I travel the world like some sort of itinerant something or other. What my parents think I do. Yes, furry is true, indeed. What other distributions think I do? Or at least think what we do, anyway, yeah. What I think I do. I'm the boss, the head honcho. But what I really do is read and read and read a lot of email and things like that. Memes always lighten the day. And I can also deflect the question with humor, which I've done here and referenced self-referentially so I can get away with it as well. So what is the DPL? What is the project leader? I mean, is it a dictator? No. I mean, in our constitution, we explicitly state that you're not obliged to do anything, to undertake any tasks that you're told to. Not that that would even need to be written, because if I told you to go and do something, you would evaluate on your own merits whether you would end up doing that. So it's not a dictator, and it doesn't have the vote on technical matters and things like this, which is quite confusing to outsiders sometimes. And they're like, well, what do you really do? And it certainly isn't a benevolent dictator for life, like in, say, the Python circle and things like that. It's certainly not for life, thank goodness. Although sometimes it feels like it. No, I'm joking. Is it a secretary? I mean, of course, we have a project secretary, but sometimes it's like a receptionist in a way. You know, people come in and they sort of expect, they come to the project and they expect someone to be sort of on the front desk, as it were, and to be sort of, you know, oh, connect you with that person, or maybe maybe you need to speak to that person, or I'm not really sure who to contact, and they don't perhaps know the exact name of the team to contact. It's like, ah, you want the cloud team, because they were looking for something else. And is it a figurehead? Well, sort of. But again, as the project leader doesn't direct in a technical sense, it can't really sort of forge ahead on that kind of angle. It can't say, right, we're putting all our money behind App Armor, let's go, guys. Like, that's not really how it works. It's not really that kind of lead us into battle kind of thing. So it's a sort of mixture of lots of different things all at once. Yeah, it's very interesting, which means it's very difficult to judge one's own success and things like that. So what's it like being DPL? Those kind of questions are quite subjective, like how do you feel you're doing at it, or those kind of questions are often sort of difficult to answer. So yeah, things like that. To put some stats on the email volume, this is current of about 15 minutes ago. Since my last bits on the DPL in Montreal, the leader inbox, this is not counting spam. The spam just disappears, you just can't even bother with that. 5,000 emails coming in, which I probably have read them all. How many emails have I sent? 1,200. This is, as I say, up to date, things like that.
We calculate our odds of getting a reply.
One more time, please.
We can calculate our odds of getting a reply.
Oh, calculate the odds of getting a reply there. Yeah. It depends who you are. It depends who you are.
Repeat the joke, please.
If a joke needs explaining, it's not funny, right? No. Something like that. Something like that.
Yeah.
We'll wait for the microphones to come around next time. Okay, so what's actually been happening in the project since last time I stood up and bored you for an hour? So this is from August the 7th, which was the last bits from the DPL in Montreal. So, I mean, let's go through some stats. So how many bugs, this is again current about 15 minutes ago. I couldn't get the JavaScript to be live, but it could have been. So 33,000 bugs filed, which isn't too bad. I think some of them might even have been closed by now. I hope you can see that. Anyone on the high score here? Anyone else in the room? I've managed to...
Why do you rate yourself so much?
Yeah, so no, but I think Docker is here, right? Yeah, you've got to take credit for some of those. Brilliant. We've had 40,000 uploads to Unstable, which is probably what I would guess. We've got a little high scoring table here. I don't seem to have snuck into this one. 750 non-maintainer uploads. I'm not really sure what I would have guessed for that, or whether you would have guessed for that. So, yeah. Hi, is there a question? No? Cool. High score table for that. Again, I sneak in there. That wasn't deliberate, but I think I just snuck in a couple of days ago on the top 10. We've had 250,000 builds, according to WannaBuild. Again, that sort of happens behind our back, so that's kind of fine. And 10,000 auto package test runs. Hopefully, we'll have more of these in the next year. That'd be kind of good. Great quote, stats are sawdust in the mouth of readers. So, like, what's actually, you can tout numbers all day and compare this year to last year and have really nice graphs, but what's actually sort of been happening in a meaningful sense in the project? So, perhaps if we go through month by month. So, in August, we had a big bumper policy release, encapsulating a whole bunch of stuff that had been sort of fallen through the cracks or been waiting around. I'd like to thank Sean for pushing forward with that, getting policy out, and I think it became a DD around this time as well. I think so, yeah. We had a sprint to deprecate Alioth, which I think, was that in Hamburg? I think so, yeah. And we also doubled the number of outreach interns that we're sponsoring this year. So that represents a dramatic increase in the in our outreach initiatives and things like that. September, I re-delegated the outreach team, somehow duplicated the doubling of the outreach interns. Okay. Get doubles, right? October saw the release of a 9.2-point release, a bug sorting party in Austria, and also Debian signed the Free Software Foundation Europe's public money, public code. And we also had a cloud sprint, which I believe was in Washington in the Microsoft offices, is that right? Getting a nod somewhere, yeah. Which is, yeah, went quite well, I believe. And a really nice write-up was sent to the announcement list. November saw two mini dev comps. I put a prize out for anyone who managed to attend both. And we finally started disabling some old protocols. So the FTP protocol, at least on security, Security Master is now disabled. GitLab also moved from their contributor license agreement to the certificate of origin, which was blocking on us sort of moving Salsa to it and things like that. And there was a new FTP team delegation to mirror new members and old members becoming alumni of that team. December saw Compat Level 11, which I know you were all waiting for. I know I was. It was a great Christmas present for me. And Debian 9.3, another good stable release, no problems there. January saw the lovely Spectre Meltdown blah happening, which still seems to be happening. I hear there's a new one yesterday, Net something, Net Spectre. Presumably not named after NetBSD, but we'll see free Spectre soon. We've all been dealing with that to some degree since then. February kicked off Google Summer of Code, and we had a huge number of applicants and really interesting project proposals and a really good turnout for people willing to be the mentors of the team, which I thought was really good. Secretary reappointment, we also had at least three sprints and things like that throughout the month. Some of those were attached to FOSDEM, which was again another big Debian meetup in general and free software meetup in general, which is really good. March saw more delegations, Windows, Debian come to Windows subsystem for Linux. I'm not sure if anyone's managed to give that a go yet, but it puts us at least on parity with at least Ubuntu and things like that on that platform. We had bug squashing parties in Albania and Curitiba. Another point release, always pretty good. And of course, the most important thing that month was the general resolution about the DPL title, which I'm sure. Excuse me? One more time, please. No, this was the DPL title, which got no seconds, but it was to rename the official title of the DPL, of the official way of speaking to them as Your Majesty. It did not receive any seconds, unfortunately, but it's there on the curiosa list. April saw a secure boot sprint, another great report sent, and there's some work ongoing this week, I believe, on secure boot. a bug squatting party in Bratislava. May saw a huge turnout in Mini Debutante Hamburg, which was amazing. It's a really, really good event, and really looking forward to that happening next year. Debian was invited to join the KDE advisory board. That matches up with our membership on the GNOME advisory board. And this is quite a small select group of stakeholders that use the operating system. And they try and for example, the desktop environment say, we're thinking of, this is what we did over the past year, this is what we're thinking of doing, this is sort of direction we're sort of going in. Of course, there isn't a top-down leadership thing going on there, but it's like, how about, you know, does this work for any of you guys? Does any of your engineering resources want to go into that particular area or this particular area? How can we sort of connect and just stay, just sort of stay on the same page in terms of like the visions for the project and things like that? So that's really good. May also saw the introduction of auto package tests, testing migration of packages from unstable to testing, which I think is really good and really promotes their use. It's pretty good. And redelegation of the publicity team. June saw the introduction of the GDPR, I keep getting the acronym wrong, team, the European Union data protection and privacy legislation, which is all, you know, fascinating. Keeps me up at night, I know that. But very important for the project. And thank you very much for all those who helped set that up and are running that, because it's pretty thankless job there, and things like that. And will the number of requests will probably only ramp up and things like that. It's also June also saw the death, the noble death of Alioth. Long live the king and its slow SSH terminals. I mean, everyone's on Salsa now, and I'm really enjoying more on that later. But I'm really enjoying the collaboration that I'm seeing now that we're on Salsa and things like that. And there's also a bug squatting party in New York, which was apparently quite well attended and got a lot of stuff done. July, features in the package tracker, another point release, and of course we're now in at DevConf 18. So yeah, that's sort of the year in words, at least, things like that. So moving on a little bit, what are the future plans? What's coming up for Debian in the next year or so? The first most important thing is Debian's 25th birthday. We were born on August the 16th, 1993. So we'll be celebrating our 25th birthday next month. So there are some plans afoot, but get your cake recipes ready, birthday cake recipes, whatever, local events. Perhaps start planning them now, because you know it'd be good to have a little birthday party. January we'll see the release team schedule, the first of three freezes that make part of a Debian release. First, the transition freeze in January, then the soft freeze in February, the hard freeze in March, just to tease you. And then around mid-2019, we're going to have the release of Debian Buster, which will be great, and very, very much looking forward to that, which I'm sure you all are as well. July, we'll see another amazing DevConf in Brazil. I'm seeing a lot of t-shirts already advertising the event, and hope to see many of you there. And late 2020, early 2021, we'll probably see Bookworm, judging by the dates. If you add up the months, that's the kind of thing we're roughly looking at this point. Things like that. So yeah, how will we get there? How will we get to a good Buster? How will we get to a good Bookworm? What kind of things do we need to keep on our radar and things like that? So what does Debian need to keep on doing? What does Debian need to, what would you call it, double down on? What do we need, things like that. What are we doing well that we should continue to be doing? I think the first thing we should do is stick to our guiding principles. So these are things that have served us well in the past throughout a massively changing environment. Going back 25 years, the free software environment was obviously clearly different. I was just born. Things like that. And what served us well has got us here and will continue to keep us where we are in the free software ecosystem. In other words, sort of this linchpin, this reliable base. So yeah, things like that. I mean, it's a bit of a cliche. Perhaps it's the Godwin's law of the Debian mailing list to say our Priorities are our users and our free software. And this can be used to justify almost anything. You know, well, our users want that, so we must give it to them. No, okay, but if we stick to this guiding principle, I think this will serve us perhaps for another 25 years. And particularly on the angle of free software, it's, if we start to compromise on that, if we're like, well, you know, we'll just put this thing in here and we'll compromise on that area, I think it'll really, whilst it might have some short-term benefits, in the long term, keeping to our strength on free software and software freedom will really stand us in good stead for the next 25 years. And we should go even further on that. So we should start to look at the contrib and non-free areas, start to look at firmware and things like that, and just see whether they are really part of what makes Debian Debian and things like that. We should also continue to cultivate technical excellence. So, I mean, being good technically, being a great technical distribution that people can rely on, is our best defense against competitors, but you know what I mean. But anyone trying to eat our lunch won't really be able to, because they just can't compete technically. It's Debian, you know. What did you go with? Oh, we went with Debian. Okay, yeah, you know, just got to keep that kind of thing. And it's sort of difficult to criticize any decision that's sort of made on a technical basis. Like, well, why did you go with this technology over this technology? It's not because it was funded by X or funded by Y, but it's just the better technology. Okay, moving on. You know, there's nothing really to discuss there. So if we continue to do that and maintain our great technical base and, you know, releasing when it's ready within reason, but not just sort of getting things out the door because they match a calendar or they match the expediency of what we've promised, or we said May, but it's not ready. You know, when we just, yeah, we'll wait. It's good. Number three, be as many things to as many people as possible. So this is one of Debian's great strengths, in that it underlies so many other derivative distributions, including all the blends that we have, a whole bunch of embedded devices, the entire Raspberry Pi ecosystem. And we're in that position because we are just, we can just be so many things to different people that people can take the base of Debian and turn it to, and make it what they want and apply it to their particular use case and things like that. And as long as we continue to not hyper-focus, say, on any one particular area, I think we'll still be able to be the basis of many other projects and things like that. And that encourages not only new contributions, but also a diverse viewpoints of technical input as well. So for example, embedded folks will say, oh, this is really useful for Debian, and we'll incorporate that. Or people from mainframes, from top down, can say, oh, this is very useful here, and things like that. All the way to desktop users and laptop users, et cetera, or Debian on phones or Kindles. Being as many things to as many people as possible means that we get a wide variety of input and contributions to the distribution. And this will be another reason why we'll still be here in 25 years. And it's sort of viral in itself as well, yeah. Hold ourselves and others to high standards. So this not only means technically, I mean, in terms of what it really means to be a Debian developer as well. I mean, if someone says, oh, he's a DD, you kind of know what that means in a technical sense. I mean, you can upload stuff to your machine and root you. But it also just is sort of a nod that person is a kind of good person. And we should maintain this very high standard of ourselves and others, of developers and contributors and things like that. But not only that, in a sort of... not only in the way we are technically competent in a high standard, but also just in dealings with others. You know, so when we speak to other people from other free software projects, you know, they're Debian developer, their reputation is sort of on the line, and Debian's reputation is on the line. And so we should maintain that kind of high standard. And that, again, will help us journey to the next 25. And speaking to this, people don't tend to be sort of accidentally successful or famous or have high respect. Sort of excellence is something that you sort of have to practice and do every day and focus on. So for you, it's not just, oh, well, I'll sort of behave myself when talking to outsiders, but within the project I'll be not so friendly or amicable. You really have to sort of be that kind of person all the time. Things like that, yeah. Collaboration. I mean, naturally, we've been collaborating for the past 24 and a half years, but to see through the next 5 or 25, continue to do so. So, I mean, these are things like we typically love to do things upstream first. I mean, local patches are sort of considered a little bit ugly, you know. If something can be done upstream, we'll poke it upstream instead. You know, it's just how things are best done, and that speaks to our innate, and no one really always needs to be told this. So this speaks to our innate viewpoint on collaboration and things along those lines. Salsa is particularly helping this. I know that I myself have increased the number of particularly small changes, small but meaningful changes, that have been much easier to make with the Salsa system, the Salsa and GitLab system. It's like, oh, this thing is slightly annoying me, and then when you just can create a merge request very quickly, you can see a lot of collaboration, and it gets accepted very quickly. So the more of this that we do, I think the better as well. Things like that. I think we should also increase the and continue to work with our pure blends and derivative distributions. They're a source of great input and energy, particularly ones that are focused on, say, a particular area, sort of like, for example, appliance devices, or a blend that's aimed at a particular country or culture and things like that. They inject a lot of very positive energy into the project through the blend. And so the more we can accumulate that, but incorporate that into Debian itself, then the better and things like that. What do we need to do better? There are some sort of things that we can immediately, we already know, so we can always do with more manpower on the core teams. They're always understaffed and things like that. These are things we sort of know about. We've got a question.
Could we say staff power?
Of course we can.
Power,
of course we can, thank you. My mistake. We're also not so great at making archive impacting changes. So if we want to universally change how the Debian works as a whole, we're still not good at making those changes. I mean, that's partly good in that we are kind of sort of small c conservative in nature. Say we wanted to, everything must have a App Armor profile. That's not that easy to get through those kind of changes. That's perhaps a bad example, but those kind of changes we need to get better at, and particularly reaching consensus on these archive-wide changes, because there's always negatives to any particular any change of when it affects so many packages and the distribution as a whole. Even things that people are in broad agreement with, like reproducible builds, no one's really against them, but sort of getting them through and just getting all of the dominoes in line, things like that, can be quite difficult from a technical and sort of procedural administration point of view, simply because it touches so many parts of the project. We also need to address the popularity of the new software store. So this is like the Flatpak hub and Snap, things like that. They're good technologies and things like that, but what's the story? How do they fit into Debian, if at all? I mean, we don't really have, I'm not going to say a policy, but we are quite wildly divergent. Some of our users really love them. What are we going to do here? We don't seem to have we don't really even seem to be talking about this particular issue, particularly because it impacts security of the system as well, if you're downloading random stuff. But also from a free software and principles point of view, some of the software available in these stores is not free software, and that really affects our guiding principles and our social contract, things like that. So it's very important. And this is not just Snap and Flathub. This is where you have sort of quasi stores or plugin kits. So the browsers typically have an extension or application store built into them, which can naturally download any sort of code that you want, again, with security and freedom concerns there. So yeah, these dilute the sort of the Debian package as a whole. And we, I think we need to have, we need to be starting to look at these over the next, at least the next year and things like that. But in terms of some concrete things we can all be doing, I mean, one thing we can definitely do is to assign credit a little bit better. I mean, we've all had an experience where someone has sort of neglected to attribute a patch, or you spend a lot of work on something and it was sort of dismissed in an outright way. This isn't great, you know, this kind of thing. People don't require credit for work, but it certainly helps and things like that. And it establishes sort of trust within a team as well. So if you provide a patch, and then everyone's sort of working together, you know, everyone just feels a little bit better about working on things, and sort of things get done, and any further disagreements get smoothed over, and things like that. So I think that's very important, and something I think we could all be addressing a little bit better. It's sort of win-win. It's not giving someone saying thank you for a patch explicitly. Not only makes them feel good, it sort of makes you feel like you're part of the team a bit better. So, I mean, from a selfish point of view, it makes you look good for giving credit and things like that. So even if you can't be convinced it will make someone else feel better, perhaps just do it for yourself, you know, whatever. On this topic, notice people who are particularly lower in self-confidence or who generally don't do that much self-promotion of themselves. So, I mean, the loud people are easy to spot and give credit to, but perhaps that quiet developer who doesn't make a big noise and sends a patch, just say, thanking them explicitly will be particularly welcome and goes a lot further than you think. For example, here's my very, very first contribution to Debian in 2006. One thing to notice is that I screw up the tags. And so I needed to send a separate, for the BTS. The BTS is controlled via email, for people who don't know. And you can set some headers at the very top that change various things, various attributes of the bug. So for example, you can tag whether it has a patch or not. And in my very first contribution, I screw it up. So yeah, it's all good. So I sent this patch along to this was a RC bug for the Etch distribution. The Etch release, which was released eventually in April 2007. And I got a reply back very quickly saying, rock on, many thanks, I'll upload this. And it eventually ended up in Etch. And this thank you, and I ended up in the change log of this particular package, was sort of meaningless because it was just my name in some not a very important package. But it was amazing, and it just sort of, you know, everything snowballed from there. And throughout that winter, I started to contribute a lot more to Debian and things like that. So it just goes to show that these small thank yous and these small remarks do go a long way and keep people around the project longer. So I really highly recommend them. Be more empathetic. So empathy is in many ways of defining it, but one way is basically understanding understanding the feelings of others. Now, by this, I don't necessarily mean agreeing with them, but at least understanding where people are coming from. One thing I like to say is that open conversations, read write, not just read only. So if you're listening to people, if you're reading a mailing list, actually try and read what they're saying. Often people, whilst they might be saying one thing on paper, try and sort of step back and really appreciate where they're coming from, what angle they're coming from, what their history is and things like that. And that speaks to the empathy like that. There's a lot of users and developers that are rather unfamiliar with us. And sometimes we fail to communicate very well about what the project is really about. A number of conversations, even this DebConf, where people weren't. One gentleman wasn't aware of the existence of the unstable distribution, thinking it was something something entirely separate from Debian itself, and things like this. And so we sort of have this sort of tragedy where we are providing a lot of things to a lot of people, but people aren't aware of them due to perhaps marketing, or we've labeled them wrong, or we're just not describing them in a very good way. Be polite when others are not. So our mailing lists are interesting at times, and sometimes it's very, very tempting to match someone's energy level, shall I put it politically like that. And I think we should all just try and just be a little bit more adult sometimes, and just, you know, things like that. Get what I mean there. Another one we could do, particularly in Teams, is to give good feedback. This would be great in that we want to sort of move the culture in a place where people feel freer to make mistakes, particularly mistakes that are reversible. Sometimes you may want to ask whether someone would like to receive feedback first, depending on who they are. I'm not going to say I'm an expert at doing this at all, so there may be better resources for good tips on providing feedback. But to focus on the work as much as possible, certainly know and identify concrete potential improvements for the future, and of course naturally avoid personal criticism of them as well. So yeah. Clearly identifying what they could improve is very important as well, because then it provides an incentive or an avenue so they can work out what to do next. I think another thing all perhaps developers could do a bit more of is sort of self-care. Debian, I think, should be fun. It's certainly fun for me, and it should remain fun for people. And people should be contributing whilst it remains fun for them. As I say in the Constitution, we explicitly say that a person who doesn't want to do a task doesn't have to do it. And that really is true. I mean, if Debian stops being fun for you, why don't stick around? Take a break. I mean, you don't have to martyr yourself on this project. There are people who will step in and take over the tasks. And there are other things in life than Debian, and it's really important to keep track of those. Debian, of course, is very important, but one shouldn't. I think you'll get where I'm going there. Keep a supply of spoons. So spoon theory is this idea that people have a finite number of resources throughout a day, and it's enumerated by this idea of you have a number of spoons and you can spend them on different tasks. Some tasks might cost more spoons than others, so a difficult interaction might cost you a number of spoons. And people start the day with a different number. So if you have a good sleep, you might start with more, or if you're suffering from an illness, you might have more, or you're just low on them generally for whatever reason. Yeah, so keep some spare and spend them in Debian wisely. I mean, there seems to be a little bit of an irony that the swag bag for this conference contains a spoon. I'm not sure whether that was deliberate or not, but I certainly found it amusing from this point of view. But at least it included chopsticks as well. And sometimes just let it go. I mean, we've all had these flame wars or whatever emails that we've got, and they've just been bugging us. You know, you walk to work and you're just thinking, sometimes you just have to just leave it in a box. Maybe you take it out of the box later, but just sometimes let it go. It's only Debian. It's only this massively important project. But it is only Debian sometimes, yeah. Another thing we could certainly do better is adopting a sort of growth mindset. The stereotypical Debian developer is sort of slightly stuck in their own little world, and is often quite dismissive of new things. And this is great from Debian's point of view sometimes, because as I say, we're a sort of small C conservative operating system, and we only release when it's ready, and we might be slow to adopt technologies, sometimes relative to other distributions, but we adopt them when they have been proven, and hopefully been proven, and we can actually justify them from that point of view. But we think we should at least keep an open mind about new things. One quote I came across a little while ago is, if you find yourself showing contempt for technology or community, you probably don't understand what they're all about. I'm not going to name any particular technologies here to put some examples on, but you often see whole categories of things dismissed just out of hand. Perhaps there are good reasons for doing so, but they've just been dismissed out of hand. And maybe these people are coming from a different angle that we just don't understand yet, or we haven't been exposed to yet. And this is not only in terms of, say, programming languages, but in terms of entire technology stacks or industries and things like that. So just keeping an open mind about these things will certainly mean that we don't ever get stuck where we are. And as I say, there's this contradiction in Debian between being slow and conservative, being good, but it's also one of our weaknesses as well. So yeah, great, phew. Thank you so much for entertaining my rambling for the past 45 minutes. Thank you very much, and I think we've got a few. Like, thank you again for inviting me here, and I think we've got quite a few minutes for some questions if there are any. So yeah, thank you. We have one.
Hello. 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 Hello, everyone. Thank you for being here. Welcome to DevConf. I hope you enjoy it. From your stats, I was missing how many new developers have joined the Debian project. Because I see like many old names there, like in the list. Are there new people coming in, or is not? Or do you know anything about this?
Well, there's certainly new people coming in, and it was terribly remiss of me not to include that number, because that is obviously an extremely important number.
Maybe room for improvement.
Room for improvement, always. Yeah.
Thank you for your work and taking care of all the email and all that.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Is there someone from front desk that can give a number on that? Maybe someone can find it on nmdebian.org and shout it out in a few seconds. No. Great. Any other questions? Oh, Sledge.
Hi, Chris.
Hi.
So, what do you think are the things that Debian should probably focus on most in the next few years? What are we not doing that we really should be?
I think we should probably be looking at some of the adjacent, I'm going to say competitors, and seeing what their users are, the motivations of their users and things like that. So you see a lot of people, what was I encountering earlier today? A lot of people choose distributions on how good they look. Like, that's pretty shallow. But we should try and see where people are coming from that point of view. But that's just one example of many. So I think we can learn a lot from, not necessarily derivatives, but we should look for the success of other distributions, things like that. I mean, I spoke to some of the things we could be doing slightly better, but that's probably not exactly addressing your question. Mm. Well, and again, it's difficult as a GPL because it's not like a technical thing like, oh, we should adopt technology X over Y.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Of course, I'm asking you a hard question.
You are. I'm putting me on the spot, and I'm prevaricating.
That's a fair answer.
Yeah. I mean, we should, I think basically just keeping an open mind and just keeping, as long as we know our options and we are evaluating them sensibly, I think that's what we should be doing. And we seem to have a fairly good process for doing that. Although it does require a volunteer, a willing volunteer and an able volunteer to sort of spearhead any particular initiative. So, you know, if they come with an idea, they need to say, I mean, to go back to AppArmor, they need to come with a proposal and say, let's try this, and that can be evaluated on its own terms. So that's if we could get around not requiring that, somehow that'll be good, because then it wouldn't need I'm not going to say a blocker, but it wouldn't need a sort of stakeholder to sort of own that, because that's obviously quite a difficult thing. Yeah.
Okay. And then the second question, I guess it's probably a common thing that people fear every year. So you've already been elected DPL twice. How do you think about a third term?
Well, I knew Steve was attending, you see, and he has a bit of a habit of asking this question. It really does depend right now. Often I'm quite myopic about, it's often, you know, the next email in the inbox, and it's very difficult to look past that, let alone the next week, the next DevConf, the next DPL term. So I have not even thought about it beyond making this slide. And of course I wouldn't want to run against you. It's certainly something to think about, and a lot of it, and particularly when I decided to rerun last year, was based on how well I thought I had done, and I can only really evaluate that nearer the time. Thank you. Hi.
Not a question, more of a comment. I have numbers for you on new contributors.
Thank you.
So 26 uploading DDs, 2 non-uploading DDs, and 42 Debian maintainers added in the last year.
Okay, nice.
So DM is by far and away the majority.
Nice. I think that speaks to the success of the DM process. Yeah, great. Thank you. Great. Again, that's it. I'm being waved at by our video team, so thank you very, very much. Everyone knows my face now, so I can't hide at the conference anymore. If you ever have anything you want to discuss, you can email me at leader@debian.org, or you can catch me around the conference. I'm here all week and a little bit beyond that. And again, thank you very much, and speak to you all soon.